Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open with some national news headline stories from Public News Service, including the seating of a Trump jury, tribal census issues, and more. We'll have local reactions from public officials to the Iran bombing of Israel. Then on Green Scene, hear about a major expansion of the El Capitan Preserve. There's a major controversy brewing in Pine Valley over a proposed cemetery, over a sole source aquifer supplying water to these rural communities. The San Diego Catholic Diocese has divested from fossil fuels. The city of La Mesa is still confronting free speech issues, and we'll have the latest on today's show. On Crime Beat, we'll have updates on a homicide in Spring Valley, an arson suspect sought by the sheriff, and an arrest made in the homicide of a homeless man in El Cajon. From County Health, we'll have a warning about a norovirus outbreak tied to raw oysters. Julian's Dark Skies community just got darker thanks to some actions at the county supervisor level. From California News Service, hear why the Market Match program for bringing produce to low-income communities is at risk. On 2024 Talks from Public News Service, we'll tell you about a controversial civil rights case, the latest in the Donald Trump January 6th trial, and arrests in a protest against Gaza. An athlete from Santee is headed to the Olympics, and there's a fundraising effort on to help send his father, a coach at Santa Ana High School, to the Olympics. Then we'll take you on the road to the backcountry in East County with highlights from many of our rural and mountain and desert communities. We'll have an update on the state's snow and water levels. And finally, on Ready, Set, Grow, Master Gardener Connie Beck will tell you all you need to know about attracting hummingbirds and butterflies to your garden. So stay tuned for the latest edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, April the 19th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Across the U.S., most political boundaries tied to the 2020 census have been in place for a while, but a national project on map fairness for indigenous populations continues to fight for changes.
When states did their redistricting a few years ago, the Native American Rights Fund launched its Fair Districting and Indian County effort. It provides resources and legal representation to tribal communities worried about newly drawn districts that could suppress their voting power. NARF staff attorney Michael Carter says there's been a lot of activity.
Just from this redistricting cycle alone, tribes have stepped up and decided that what the state and county governments are doing is not right.
He points to several cases with various levels of success, including two high-profile ones from North Dakota. I'm Mike Moen.
A group of Republican attorneys general contends that private groups and individuals do not have a right to file lawsuits under Section 2, but Carter says there's a separate provision used in North Dakota that does provide that opportunity. And all 12 jurors plus an alternate were selected this week to serve on the jury in former President Donald Trump's trial in New York, after they made it clear to both sides they could render a fair and impartial verdict. That from NBC News. They report a lawyer, a banker, a speech therapist are among the 12 jury members seated. Meantime, CNN reports Judge Mershon said the court will resume Friday morning, jury selection expected to continue until the remaining alternates are seated. The judge also said he's aiming to hold a Sandoval hearing, where he can be asked if previous bad acts can be brought up by the prosecution for the trial. And with Alzheimer's cases on the rise in states like Connecticut, experts say people should consider early health care planning.
A new report shows around 77,000 of Connecticut's 65 and older residents were diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2020. This is below other estimates, but Jessica Empeño with Compassion and Choices says understanding a person's care wishes is a good first step. She adds it's not just about the big things, but the little ones too.
Being able to wake up and look out the window and have my coffee in my favorite mug every morning is what's important to me, right? It can start with those little things that help people understand who you are and what you hope for in your final phase of life.
Compassion and Choices Dementia Values and Priorities tool is online. It helps people document their healthcare wishes before developing dementia or an illness affecting their decision-making abilities. Empeño thinks people should update their plans every 5 to 10 years rather than creating them just once. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
A common mistake in healthcare planning is completing an advanced directive but not telling anyone about it. This is Public News Service. A new Gallup and Lumina Foundation poll unveils a concerning reality that Hoosiers may lack clarity about the true costs of their higher education.
The survey reveals that merely 23% of U.S. adults without college degrees could estimate the annual net cost of a bachelor's degree from a public college within $5,000 of the actual expense. The repercussions of the financial fog are overwhelming for students like Gabriella Espinoza, a 27-year-old nursing student at IUPUI in Indianapolis. She says looming debt from school cast a shadow over her future.
I'm trying to figure out what my debt is going to look like and how long that's going to take me to pay off. I'm luckily in a position right now where I live at home with mom and she's been helping me out. You know, eventually I'd like to think about moving out, moving on my own.
75% of those polled believe a bachelor's degree is extremely or very valuable. However, cost is a major deterrent for many who wish to get a degree. I'm Joe Ullery, Public News Service.
And an annual march for farm workers' rights is being held Sunday in Northwest Washington. More now from our Eric Tigetoff.
This year, marchers are focusing on the conditions for local tulip and daffodil workers. Alfredo Juarez with the farm workers' rights organization Community to Community Development says tulip and daffodil harvesters are raising concerns about pay, pesticide use near where they're working, and the need for clean restrooms. He says the march coincides with the Skagit Valley Tulip Festival.
During the tourist season, when you show up here, you see all the beautiful flowers with different colors, design, but the work that goes into making all that happen is done by the workers and the people that you don't really see. You just see the flowers.
The Skagit Valley Tulip Festival is the largest tulip festival in the country and draws 1 million visitors annually.
Finally, from Ross Brown, balancing the needs of the many with those who have traditionally reaped benefits from public lands is behind a new rule issued Thursday by the Bureau of Land Management.
A 250,000 acres of public lands, including 13 million in New Mexico, now fall under the public lands rule. The BLM is charged with managing multiple uses, but has historically prioritized extraction, such as oil and gas drilling, along with cattle grazing, over conservation and outdoor recreation. The New Mexico Wildlife Federation's Jesse Dubell believes the new rule is more fair-minded.
I really feel like this new rule doesn't minimize those other things. Those other uses are still going to be allowed to continue, but now decisions are going to be made with conservation in the forefront. And of course, conservation, by definition, is the wise use of our natural resources.
I'm Roz Brown.
This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. You can hear us on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and you can always find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Local and statewide political leaders are speaking out to condemn Iran's drone and missile attacks on Israel amid escalating tensions in the Mideast. The fundamentalist Islamic State, which finances and supplies anti-Israel militias in Lebanon, Gaza, and Syria, launched nearly 200 explosive-carrying drones and over 100 ballistic and cruise missiles at Israel. Most were shut down by Israeli defenses with help from U.S., British, and Jordanian forces, though one child was injured. Iran's attack on Israel came after Israel bombed a building attached to Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria. That strike reportedly targeted a meeting between Iranian intelligence officials and Palestinian militants over the conflict in Gaza, where more than 30,000 Palestinians have died since Israel waged war in retaliation for the murder of over 1,300 Israeli civilians by Hamas militants. Seven people were killed in the Iranian embassy in Damascus during a meeting that included leaders of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a group armed and funded by Iran, the New York Times reported. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a San Diego Democrat whose district includes parts of East County, said, "Of Iran's attacks on Israel, my heart goes out to the Israeli people who are suffering attacks from Iran. I have my family in Tel Aviv, so I know how painful and personal this feels, especially as Jews in Israel and around the world were still reeling from the horrific attack of October 7th. Jacob, who has called for a ceasefire in Gaza, urged leaders on both sides to exercise restraint and de-escalate tensions immediately. Governor Gavin Newsom tweeted that, "California stands with Israel against these unprecedented attacks from Iran," end quote. Congressman Darrell Isha, a Republican who represents East County, expresses support for Israel but claims that President Biden shared responsibility for the attack. Isha says, "Terror must be countered, and Biden hasn't done it yet." However, the Jewish Federation of San Diego issued a statement voicing gratitude to the Israeli Defense Force and for Biden's ironclad support, which helped prevent significant damage or casualties from Iran's attacks. Israel has pledged that Israel will respond to the Iranian attacks, but has not divulged details. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Zaravan Ali.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Zaravan Ali with the Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors have voted to add more space and species protection to the land at Almonte Road in Lakeside. Supervisors approved the donation for 75 acres of land next to El Capitan County Preserve. The county entered into an agreement with Lakeside's River Park Conservancy for the land donation, which appraised at $1.5 million. County Parks Department officials say the land fits into the county's Multiple Species Conservation Plan, or MSCP. The additional acreage expands the county's MSCP preserve to nearly 46,300 acres. The new acreage will connect El Capitan County Preserve and the historic Flume Corridor at Almonte County Park. It will also improve regional trail opportunities and protect the native habitat. The open space will support sustainable goals for species conservation that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions by approximately 95 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year, equivalent to the annual number of emissions produced by over 20 gasoline-powered passenger vehicles. It will also expand opportunities for outdoor recreation in nature, as well as expanding open spaces next to native ecosystems and habitats. A core goal of the Parks Department's conservation plan is to have a positive impact on public health and provide open space lands to protect native habitats and improve water and air quality for the future generations.
Neighbors have secured nearly 1,800 signatures on a petition opposing plans to build a cemetery in Pine Valley on 38 acres just south of Interstate 8 on Old Highway 80. The cemetery proposed by SD Crescent Wood Services would provide burial space for Muslims in San Diego County, which currently has no Muslim cemetery. Residents' primary concern is potential groundwater contamination. The World Health Organization has reported on cemeteries' potential impacts on public health when close to aquifers or other water sources. Billy Joe Janin, chair of the Campo Lake Marina Community Planning Group, CLMCPG, is appalled that the project is proposed over the aquifer that provides groundwater for rural residents reliant upon well water for drinking, bathing, and irrigation. She says it seems a little scandalous that there are no ordinance protections for cemeteries sitting over groundwater, despite the known dangers of graveyard effluents. The proposed site sits above the Campbell Cottonwood Creek Aquifer, which is designated as a sole source aquifer by the Environmental Protection Agency. County Planner J. Roland Chase told the Campo Lake Marina Community Planning Group that the project is permittable under the current zoning. The major use permit application proposes that 15 acres be preserved as open space, 16 acres to be used for graves and driveways, and that 6 acres of ravine area be protected for drainage. SD Crescentwood Services, the nonprofit formed to build the cemetery, says they plan to bury about 4 bodies per month. In a recent interview with East County Magazine, Crescentwood Chair Nasser Alameddine said the bodies would be encased in cement or concrete, regardless of historical burial practices in other Muslim cemeteries. He says, "We'll do whatever we need in order to protect the land and the groundwater." But Janin disputes the number of burials claimed and says Crescentwood's website previously estimated 350 burials a year, or about 30 a month, up to a maximum capacity of 26,000 bodies. In a letter to county planners and supervisors, the Campo Lake Marina Community Planning Group called the project application incomplete because, quote, SD Crescentwood Cemetery is also planning a second phase that is even more impactful, end quote. The community planner says neighbors deserve to see full studies on the cumulative impacts of the whole project. The rural planning group also voices concern over pollution from up to 350 decomposing bodies per year. They want to see testing of groundwater quality under existing local cemeteries to learn what bacteria, chemicals, and heavy metals might leach into groundwater at the Pine Valley Aquifer, which several rural communities rely upon. According to Alameddine, no crypts or mausoleums are planned. Local mosques would provide services led by the Islamic Center of San Diego. Grave spaces would be provided free to local Muslims, though families would need to cover burial costs. Alameddine says the rural nature of the site with mountain views makes it ideal for mourners seeking a tranquil location. The cemetery would appear meadow-like, with no grass or lawns, he said, adding that native plants would be preserved and graves would be marked with simple plaques. Crescentwood's nonprofit board, comprised of representatives from several of the county's major mosques, formed over a common concern for the lack of Muslim cemeteries and cemeteries in general across Southern California. Major cemeteries in San Diego County have run out of space and are no longer selling graves, a problem that is nationwide. Efforts to build Muslim cemeteries have faced fervent community opposition in Texas, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. Some courts have ruled for the cemeteries. In Stafford County, Virginia, the Department of Justice intervened when county officials changed zoning laws after a Muslim cemetery was proposed, and a judge found that the county had violated the Federal Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. In its scoping letter sent out last October in response to the application for a major use permit, the San Diego County Planning Commission staff told Crescentwood that a lot of work had to be done before they could bring it to a vote. In addition to rejecting the group's proposal for portable restroom facilities at the site, the county demanded advanced hydrology studies should be done to determine if there is any risk to groundwater. The County Planning Commission is required to solicit feedback and public comment from the local community planning group prior to voting on the project. If they approve it, then the application will be sent up the chain for the County Board of Supervisors to vote on. No dates have been set yet for either vote, but the Campbell Lake Marina Community Planning Group plans to discuss the issue again at their meeting on April 24th. Neighbors insist that they are not biased against Muslims and say that they would oppose any large cemetery over their drinking water supply. Indeed, some Muslim burial practices have an environmental advantage over those of many other cultures. Neighbor Pam Haas posted on Facebook, "The one thing that is positive for us and our water supply is that Muslims generally do not embalm bodies for local burial, using formaldehyde and many other toxic chemicals that will leach into the aquifers." Dr. Wes Danskin, the San Diego Hydrogeology Project Chief at the U.S. Geologic Survey, said fears of the groundwater were mostly unfounded, as groundwater contamination can be monitored on an ongoing basis. Danskin, who has worked for the U.S. Geological Service for over 40 years, says a reasonable solution is to put a well in the center of the cemetery and test it periodically. But Danskin said it is very common for people to voice fears about groundwater in cases of otherwise unpopular projects. If you're concerned about a cemetery, you ought to be concerned about horses and about your own septic tank, he added. But the planning group's letter retorts, "We residents can't even bury a large animal without a county permit, yet county staff are being quite lenient with a project that involves many more tons of potential effluent than a single dead horse." Ben Good, who lives across the street from the project, says he is afraid his home will lose its value and says the new owners have shrugged off many concerns. Good says Planning Commission staffer Roland Chase repeatedly assured him that no ground would be broken until permits were issued, but then did an about-face this past summer when she emailed him to say the county had given Crescentwood permission to build an access road so they could conduct further testing. Good awoke to the sound of bulldozers early this past January and looked out his front window to see an excavator and other equipment building a new driveway. A contractor himself, he said he had never seen construction allowed to begin before permits were issued. Good pointed to large piles of unearthed manzanita, red shank, and chaparral along the new road, laying right across old Highway 80 from his own driveway. He said most of the surrounding land was dense with native flora, some of which he believed were protected species. He asks why environmental studies weren't done first, adding, "They don't know what habitat may have already been bulldozed through." Frustrated, Good's next move was to put four pigs at the closest property line. Ironically, Good said the survey work done by the Crescentwood confirmed that he owned more of the hillside than he had realized, and that he then decided to utilize it. "A hillside is great for hogs because it keeps it from getting too muddy," he said. "It helps their musculature going up and down the hill, which makes for good meat. The Muslim faith considers pigs to be unclean creatures, and their religion prohibits eating pork." Good, long active in 4-H, says he's had hogs on different parts of his property on and off for the last 20 years. "Well, he has no problem sharing his land with pigs," he concludes. "I just don't want to live across the street from 26,000 bodies." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The Diocese of San Diego has divested its financial holdings from the fossil fuel industry, the first Catholic diocese in the United States to make a move like this public. The effort began in 2021 to eliminate all direct investments in fossil fuels and reduce indirect holdings through mutual funds to 3% of its portfolio. Jose Aguto, who recently stepped down as the leader of the nonprofit Catholic Climate Covenant, says the guidance came straight from the Vatican.
Pope Francis signaled quite clearly that we need to move away from fossil fuel production. So our Catholic institutions have a moral obligation to heed that call. Divestment needs to be part of that strategy.
Pope Francis has repeatedly called for an end to the era of fossil fuels in the face of climate change and promotes stewardship of the environment and natural resources. More than 350 Catholic institutions outside the U.S. have announced divestment commitments. Christina Bagaglio-Slentz, the San Diego Diocese's Associate Director for Creation Care, says she hopes other American Catholic groups will follow suit.
Pope Benedict XVI says all purchasing is a moral act, so we have to think about the way that our financial behavior has an impact around the world.
The United States is both the global leader in fossil fuel production and the largest historical source of planet-heating greenhouse gas emissions. This story was produced with original reporting from Brian Rowe for Earthbeat, a project of National Catholic Reporter. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The La Mesa City Council continues to grapple with a balance between free speech protected by the U.S. Constitution and hate speech that just doesn't seem to go away. In its latest action, the council voted 4-1 on April 9th to adopt a resolution supporting Assembly Bill 3024, the Stop Hate Littering Act, introduced by Assemblymember Chris Ward. That bill adds language to the current California State Civil Code, expanding the definition of intimidation by threat of violence to include distribution of hateful materials on private property of another. If done without authorization for the purpose of terrorizing the owner or occupant, or in reckless disregard of the risk of terrorizing the owner or occupant. The vote comes after anti-Semitic flyers were disseminated to some La Mesa residences in recent months. Vice Mayor Laura Lothian cast the only dissenting vote. She called it a slippery slope for those in power to ban speech that they don't like. Councilmember Patricia Dillard, who is African American, likened dissemination of hateful flyers to the terror and intimidation Black Americans have suffered historically. She said, "I remember when there were people that burned a cross on someone's front yard," adding that flyers are just one more way for individuals to spread heat. "If they want to live their lives in hate, I feel sorry for them," Dillard said. "But I just don't want it done on my property." Lothian responded by saying it was a big jump from delivering hateful literature to burning crosses on front lawns, then revealed that when she ran for council in 2001, hate flyers were posted in public and delivered to her. "Called me a bigot, a Nazi, and everything you could think of." She related, "I didn't like it. It was scary," but she added, "That's just the cost of being in America. People are just going to say things you don't like." Before council members cast their votes on the resolution, Mayor Mark Arapostathis took a moment to share a message to La Mesa citizens. "The city of La Mesa rejects hate and condemns it," he assured them, which was met with a round of applause by those attending in the seating gallery. His words come after calls from residents asking the mayor to publicly denounce hate speech. Making the vote more meaningful were the in-person citizen comments that came only moments before, with residents pleading with the council to reinstate remote call-in public comments that the council banned in late February. In response to a February 13th city council meeting in which a barrage of callers spouted hateful comments toward the Jewish faith and community, the council voted 4-1 in its next meeting on February 27th to ban all remote public comments. Councilman Jack Hsu cast the only dissenting vote. At the time, Councilmember Colin Parent urged the council to reinstate an ad hoc committee to find ways to allow for remote public comments, but with some safeguards. Opponents of the ban argue that it silences voices such as working people, parents of young children, seniors, and the disabled, who may have difficulty attending meetings in person. Jean Carpenter, a community activist, criticized Councilmember Parent and Mayor Mark Arapostathis during the April 9th meeting, saying they have not responded to requests for a meeting about the subject. In a recent interview with East County Magazine's show aired on KNSJ, Carpenter said Janet Castellanos, former chair of La Mesa's Police Oversight Board and an activist in many local organizations, has unsuccessfully sought meetings with Parent and the mayor to discuss proposals for bringing back remote public comments with possible rule changes. Carpenter called the mayor and Parent cowards for being afraid to meet with Castellanos to discuss concerns over the loss of First Amendment rights. Mayor Arapostathis has not responded to a request for comment or to provide an update on the ad hoc committee's progress. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. Sheriff's deputies from the Rancho San Diego station responded to a call on April 16th, reporting that someone was trying to break into a residence on La Presa in Spring Valley. Deputies entered the home and found a female victim with head trauma. Despite life-saving measures by deputies, the woman died at the scene, says Lieutenant Michael Crew. She has been identified as 35-year-old Ashley Bird. The suspect, 39-year-old Christopher Bird, was later found dead in a vehicle by law enforcement officers in Orange County. Lieutenant Crew says there are no other suspects. The motivation and circumstances of the crime are still under investigation. Anyone with information about this crime is asked to call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
The San Diego County Sheriff's Department is seeking Sean Arquad for suspected arson. On April 9th, shortly after 11:30 p.m., Sheriff deputies and Sean Miguel Fire Department responded to a call from a resident reporting that their house on Sacramento Avenue in Spring Valley was on fire. Units arrived within minutes and found small fires in several rooms. The people inside the home were safely evacuated. One person was medically evaluated on the scene for minor burns and smoke inhalation. Detectives from the Sheriff's Bomb/Arson Unit were called into the scene to investigate the origins and cause of the fire. The fire was determined to have started inside a bedroom. The cause of the fire was determined to be arson. Detectives identified Arquard as the suspect believed to have set the fires to the home. Deputies were unable to locate him. He is 45 years old, black with brown eyes and short black hair, 6 feet 3 inches tall and weighs around 220 pounds. Sean Arquard is wanted for unlawful and reckless cause of fire to an inhabited building. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Saravan Ali.
This is Danita Ramirez with a Crime Beat report. The El Cajon Police Department is investigating the death of a homeless man as a homicide. Officers responded to reports of an assault around 3 a.m. on April 9th. They found the victim in the 100 block of Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. Officers provided emergency medical aid, but the victim died at the scene. His injuries are consistent with blunt force trauma, according to Lieutenant K. MacArthur with El Cajon Police Department. Anyone with information on this crime should contact El Cajon Police. The identity of the victim has not yet been released, pending notification of his family.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update to this story. A suspect in this case has been arrested and charged with murder. John Paul Campbell was apprehended April 12th by U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents while crossing the border into the U.S. The arrest came after El Cajon police identified him as the suspect and issued a Be on the Lookout bulletin. Campbell had been arrested in February for assault with a deadly weapon and was released on probation April 8th, just hours before this homicide occurred. He was homeless at the time and had a long history of violent crimes. The victim, also homeless, has been identified as 41-year-old Robert Mancy. The motive behind the homicide is unknown, and the investigation is ongoing.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Zaravan Ali with a health alert. San Diego County health officials are warning about a new outbreak of norovirus, once again tied to the consumption of raw oysters. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, confirms that 11 cases of norovirus in San Diego are linked to frozen oysters from South Korea. the latest outbreak among people who ate oysters at 100 Seafood Grill Buffet in Mission Valley on March 30th and became sick, including one person treated at an emergency room days later. The FDA is cautioning all restaurants and stores that sell frozen, raw, half-shelled oysters to check their freezers and verify the origin of their oysters. These items may be labeled Amazing Sea Brand and may have been processed by JBR in Korea. The lot numbers are available through the county's news center. The county of San Diego was working with the Californian Department of Public Health to identify other potential retailers in our region. Dr. Willem Wooten, the county's public health officer, says, "If you have consumed these oysters and feel ill, it is important to see your doctor for an evaluation. If you or someone you live with is sick with norovirus, it is important to wash your hands often and clean common areas to prevent the spreading of the infection," she adds. This comes 4 months after the County of San Diego's health officials linked 41 confirmed and probable cases of norovirus to raw oysters imported from Mexico. People infected with norovirus generally develop nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps, fever, and body aches approximately 12 to 48 hours after consuming contaminated foods. The illness typically lasts 1 to 3 days, but can cause dehydration requiring medical attention, especially in young children, older adults, and people with other illnesses. To report illness to the county after dining out or purchasing oysters from wholesale food locations, you can call 858-505-6814. Once again, that's 858-505-6814.
Since becoming an international dark sky community in 2021, Julian is part of the mere 1% of the United States where the Milky Way remains visible. The mountain's town mission recently faced a challenge when the brightness of 14 newly installed streetlights exceeded dark sky community standards, prompting the Julian Dark Sky Network to seek assistance from Supervisor Joel Anderson, whose staff reached out to the San Diego Gas and Electric Company. Supervisor Anderson says, "I am pleased to report that through our coordinated efforts, the luminosity of the streetlights was effectively reduced from 6,200 lumens to 4,000 lumens in compliance with dark sky community standards." Doug Solacy, founder of the Julian Dark Sky Network, says, "Local residents confirmed to us they saw a significant beneficial change and were quite happy. This change was unquestionably beneficial to the quality of life of the residents of the historic district." Julian is one of only two dark skies communities in San Diego County. The other is Borrego Springs. Both communities now draw tourists who come to enjoy stargazing activities as well as other attractions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Donato Ramirez.
California's program that helps low-income families buy fresh fruit and vegetables is on the chopping block, so healthcare advocates are asking legislators to save the Market Match program. Governor Gavin Newsom has proposed cutting most of the program's $35 million budget in order to help close the state's budget shortfall. Sophia Vaquero from Echo Park says she depends on Market Match in more ways than one.
It helps people be able to stretch their budget further, and then I think it helps the community in that it creates a sense of camaraderie at the farmers market and makes people more invested in the community itself.
The program matches every dollar CalFresh customers spend on fresh fruits and vegetables at a farmer's market, up to between $10 and $20 per day. It is active at 294 sites across the state and is partially paid for through federal matching funds. Surgeon John Ma with Marin Health Medical Center serves on the board of the American Heart Association's Bay Area chapter. He says Market Match promotes healthy eating and boosts the local farm economy.
An improved diet really will have long-term meaningful impacts on health and also reduce healthcare costs, and it really helps to sustain the growers and the merchants. I guess it's a win-win-win.
Suhan Jung is with the Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation in San Francisco and sits on the board of the Heart of the City Farmers Market.
If the market match will be cut, that is terrible, though that means they have less money to buy the food. So the market match is very important for the low-income family and the senior.
Legislators and the governor are working toward the May budget revise and must pass a balanced budget by June 15th. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Does this now mean that the organizers of January 6th should also risk financial ruin? I mean, you had police officers hurt there. People were killed.
Civil rights attorney Ben Crump questions if a court ruling against Black Lives Matter organizers should also apply to the Capitol insurrection. The Fifth Circuit says activists who staged a BLM event can be held liable by a police officer injured by protesters. Civil rights advocates say that could effectively end the right to protest for states in the district, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. 12 jurors have been selected in former President Donald Trump's criminal trial in Manhattan. Opening statements could begin Monday. Meanwhile, a federal judge says lawsuits filed by police and members of Congress against Trump for January 6th can proceed. California Congresswoman Barbara Lee is the lead plaintiff in an NAACP lawsuit.
Our democracy was at risk. It was an assault on our democracy. And in our lawsuit, we are saying that we must hold him accountable.
The Supreme Court is set to hear arguments next week on Trump's claim he has unlimited lifetime immunity from prosecution for presidential actions, including on January 6th. More than 100 Columbia University students were arrested Thursday after refusing to take down what they call a Gaza solidarity encampment on campus. Jewish graduate student Kim Silverman tells CBS she no longer feels safe there.
To hear them cheering Intifada right now, when that instilled so much fear in so many Jews all around the world, is just really disturbing.
Wednesday, Columbia's president told a congressional committee it's challenging to both protect Jewish students from harassment and ensure free speech. Anti-vaccine activist and minor party presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has qualified for the ballot in Michigan, where the last two elections were decided by less than 1% of the vote. For the second time in 2 weeks, Arizona Republicans have blocked repeal of the state's near-total abortion ban. State Representative Oscar De Los Santos says voters want it repealed.
It is time for Republicans to listen to the vast majority of Arizonans and to stop silencing us.
Blue state legislatures are seeing dozens of bills this year to stop book bans and protect librarians, but those are being outpaced by legislation going the other direction. West Virginia lawmakers passed a bill to make librarians criminally liable for running what State Delegate Brandon Steele describes as sanctuaries of pedophilia.
I'm here to protect children. I'm here to protect our young people and make sure that they are not put in a vulnerable position where they are presented with pure pornography.
Opponents say these laws whip up a frenzy of censorship and target books by and for minorities. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Alex Bowen of Santee, former captain of the Santana High School water polo team, is heading to the Paris Olympics on Team USA's water polo team. His father, Rod Bowen, coaches Santana's water polo team. Now a GoFundMe page has been set up to help Coach Bowen and his wife, Barb, travel to watch their son at the Summer Olympics. The effort was launched by Melissa Harmon, whose three sons have all been mentored by Coach Bowen. She says, Coach Bowen's love for the game and the way he inspires young men to be the best they can be makes him a favorite of players and parents. Harmon says, he immensely cares about his players, both in and out of the water. Now is our chance to give back to Coach and Barb. Alex Bowen is considered one of the best shooters on Team USA, according to the USA Water Polo's team's website. He scored over 200 goals while at Stanford and was named a first-team All-American all 4 years. He captained Santana's water polo team as a junior and senior, helping lead Santana several league titles. He holds CIF San Diego section record for the most career goals scored at 547. He was named to All-American in all California teams. Later, he played club water polo for the San Diego Shores, and after participating in the Junior Olympics, he was named Junior Olympics All-American from 2008 through 2011. At Stanford University, he scored over 200 goals and was named to the NCAA first team and multiple All-American teams. He has since competed in numerous international competitions and currently plays professionally in France. On the Team USA website, he states, I've always wanted to get the most out of the sport I love. I would like to thank my mom for being there and supporting me through the stressful times, adding that he also thanks those who have mentored him and the friendships he's made in the sport. If you would like to donate to help Coach Bowen and his wife go to Paris to watch their son compete in the 2024 Summer Olympics, you can donate on the GoFundMe page titled, Help the Bowen Water Polo Family. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Miriam Raftery taking you on the road to San Diego County's backcountry, which includes rural, mountain, and desert communities. Our unincorporated backcountry area, though seemingly quiet, is actually alive with opportunities for adventure and local events. Aside from the lure of the open road on one of San Diego's most scenic highways, such as oak and boulder-studded Old Highway 80 or beautiful State Route 79, there are barbecues, fairs, country markets, art and music shows, farms open for tours, yard sales, horseback riding, and a shimmering lake tucked into the scenery along the way. San Diego's backcountry offers Airbnb experiences in towns such as Campbell, Boulevard, Guate, Descanso, Julian, Pine Valley, and Hacumba Hot Springs, or you can stay at the more than century-old Julian Hotel. There are also plenty of opportunities to try new things and meet new friends. How about family-friendly karaoke night every Thursday at Pine Valley House in Pine Valley? Or maybe you're craving a lively country-flavored concert. Where Highways 79 and 80 meet in the village of Descanso, the Junction Outback is a wild outdoors venue behind the Descanso Junction restaurant. They celebrate summer there with live music every Friday and Saturday night in the summer months. Guate Mountain Native Plant Nursery in Guate, between Descanso and Pine Valley, makes a beautiful stop on the weekend along a sunny drive on Old Highway 80. And nearby, you'll find the Treon Wooden Spoon Gallery, a treat to visit with its art glass and wooden spoon collection. Lake Cuyamaca on Highway 79 heading into Julian is beautiful any time of year, with fishing, hiking, and glimpses of wildlife from deer to bald eagles. The popular pub at Lake Cuyamaca offers a lake view dining experience. The kids' trout fishing derby there is planned in September, where fishing in the pines has become an exciting yearly gathering with picnicking and a slew of prizes. If you venture further up Highway 79 to Julian, a historic gold rush town famous for its apple pie, you can stroll its quaint streets and choose from several great eateries, try your hand at gold panning, or take a tour of the California Wolf Center nestled in the hills nearby. Or venture up Sunrise Highway toward Mount Laguna, a popular destination for snowgoers in winter as well as campers in spring, summer, and fall. Mount Laguna is one of the first camping areas that Pacific Crest trail hikers encounter along their trek. Hacumba Hot Springs, 29 miles southeast of Pine Valley, at the farthest reaches in San Diego's backcountry, is enjoying a rebirth of popularity with a bazaar the first Saturday each month from 10 to 2 at the old bathhouse landmark in the center of town. Visiting musicians also play there to stars and candlelight. Now, folks can catch an art exhibit, too, at the old bathhouse, or visit Gilliam Gallery across the highway after strolling along the lakes and dunes. The Hacumba Hot Springs Hotel has recently been renovated and reopened. The Desert View Tower, just east of Hacumba, near the Imperial County line, is a cherished landmark and camping spot overlooking the desert above Ocotillo. Its famous Boulder Park provides a rare adventure with hidden trails, caves, and charming rock carvings. Further east, Anza Borrego Desert State Park, which is partly in San Diego County, provides wildflower viewing in spring, hiking, a visitor center, famous resorts, golf, bighorn sheep to see, whimsical sculptures, and stargazing after dark. Along I-8 and Alpine, you can stop to dine at local restaurants or enjoy a cold beer at a brewery. The Viejas Native American Reservation in Alpine has an outlet center with bowling and an arcade for the kids, as well as a casino and hotels. Other Native American reservations in East County offer attractions ranging from casinos to campgrounds, golf, restaurants, and at Barona in Lakeside, a Native American cultural museum. In late summer, Barona and Sequan host powwows with competitions featuring Native American dancers, drummers, bird singers, and vendors. You can also savor wine tasting at the many wineries in the Ramona wine region, as well as wineries in other areas such as Campo and Jamul. Campo is also home to the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, where you can take a ride aboard a historic train. Ramona also has a camel dairy and the historic Guy B. Woodward Museum. Drop down Highway 78 to cruise through Lakeside, which is home to several county parks for scenic hikes, as well as the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. Exploring San Diego's backcountry is popular with individuals and families. Our backcountry is also a favorite destination for motorcycle and classic car clubs. Bicyclists also take advantage of the route they call the Southern Tour on their way to the east coast of the U.S.
Besides year-round attractions, many towns in East County's backcountry also have unique festivals, parades, deep pit barbecues, and other special events that you can find on our calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
A new storm is bringing rain and snow to our region. The snow level is forecast to reach as low as 3,000 feet by Friday night. Mount Laguna could receive 3 to 4 inches of snow, with up to 2 inches in Julian. Interstate 8 east of Alpine could also get snow, so use caution if traveling in this area. Pine Valley, Cuyamaca, and Warner Springs are among the areas where you may find snow if you're looking for some snow play after the storm passes. The weekend will bring drier weather, but a new storm system Monday, April 8th is predicted to bring gusty winds and rain showers, though with warmer temperatures. All of this rain and snow is good news for our region and state. From a drought-ending perspective, the San Diego County Water Authority said Tuesday that two wet winters combined with regional investments and conservation mean San Diego County has enough water to meet the region's needs for 2024 and the foreseeable future, Times of San Diego reports. Statewide, California's vital snowpack has risen to 10% higher than normal in this year's final scheduled survey by the State Department of Water Resources on April 2nd. Governor Gavin Newsom was on hand for the traditional manual survey at Phillips Station near Lake Tahoe, where a snow depth of 64 inches was measured, 13% greater than normal for that location. It's the second year in a row that California's snowpack has exceeded normal, and the focus now shifts to forecasting the spring water runoff. California Department of Water Resources Director Carla Nemeth calls the levels great news, adding, "This water year shows once again how our climate is shifting and how we can swing from dry to wet conditions within a season." She says conservation is crucial to manage runoff, adding, "Capturing and storing what we can in wetter years for drier times remains a key priority." The Sierra snowpack supplies about 30% of California's water needs. Its natural ability to store water is why the snowpack is often referred to as the state's frozen reservoir. Thanks to a wet winter, the water levels in reservoirs statewide are also up 16% above average for this time of year, which is good news for all Californians. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Ramirez.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last, those plants have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password?
Zauschnerias or epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy type flowers that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden, not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.